I can say with authority, the Trump administration's actions undermine both our national security and our intelligence.
The president himself just came out with a statement saying there was absolutely no pressure put on him, and there wasn't.
They have been investigating this president before he even got elected. They have voted three times on impeachment on this floor.
The future of our democracy is at stake. There come a time when you have to be moved by the spirit of history to take action to protect and preserve the integrity of our nation.
I think it's very appropriate for the President of the United States to suggest that you got a corruption problem, and this prosecutor that was fired maybe it was because he was corrupt.
We have to hold this president accountable, and we have to protect our democracy.
I have no idea what precipitated the delay, but I was among those advocating that we needed to stick with our Ukrainian friends.
Because what those notes reflect is a classic mafia-like shakedown of a foreign leader.
Just so you understand, it's the single greatest witch hunt in American history, probably in history, but in American history. It's a disgraceful thing.
I'm announcing the House of Representatives moving forward with an official impeachment inquiry. No one is above the law.
It's The Takeaway. I'm Matt Katz, filling in this week for Tanzina Vega. Today, the White House released a memo of the July 25th phone call between President Donald Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. The first page of that memo notes that it is not a verbatim transcript of the phone call, but instead compiles notes from Situation Room duty officers and National Security Council staff members who listened into the call. In that call, though, President Trump asks Ukraine's president to, quote, do us a favor and contact Attorney General William Barr and Rudy Giuliani, the president's personal lawyer, saying, quote, there's a lot of talk about Biden's son, that Biden stopped the prosecution, and a lot of people want to find out about that. So whatever you can do with the attorney general, that would be the attorney general of the United States, would be great. President Trump spoke with reporters today at the United Nations following the White House's release of the phone call transcript summary.
The letter was a great letter, meaning the letter revealing the call. That was done at the insistence of myself and other people that read it. It was a friendly letter. There was no pressure. The way you had that built up, that call, it was going to be the call from hell. It turned out to be a nothing call, other than a lot of people said, I never knew you could be so nice.
Well, joining me now are Amanda Turkle, Washington Bureau Chief for HuffPost, and Max Kuttner, a journalist covering the FBI, Justice Department, and Russia probes. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
So we're going to start off with Max. Following this release of the White House memo, President Trump said there's, quote, no pressure from him towards Ukraine's president. But the memo shows him asking Ukraine's president to get in touch with Attorney General Barr and Rudy Giuliani to investigate Joe Biden. He also asked him to do quote, a favor for him. So how significant is this ask by an American president?
Well, first of all, Matt, we're seeing President Trump, in my view, responding the way he responded in the early days of the Mueller-Russia investigation. He's downplaying it while also feigning cooperation, calling it a witch hunt, and having his allies, like some of the clips you played as we were coming on, attack the probe and support him. In terms of this ask, this is a really big ask. I think the Democrats will still have to show why this is the red line of everything that they've claimed the president has done, why this is the one that, for which they are opening the impeachment inquiry. It's also significant that Attorney General Bill Barr's name comes in here.
This is new. We didn't know of his involvement at this point until today.
Right. We knew that the Justice Department had supported the acting Director of National Intelligence in not sending the whistleblower complaint about this call to Congress. However, we didn't know the extent of Barr's apparent involvement, and the Justice Department came out with a statement after the release of this memo saying he didn't know about this call until weeks later. He hasn't been involved in the Ukraine issue, so they are trying to distance him a bit from this.
President Trump also told the Ukrainian president, I would like you to do us a favor, and then says he'd like the Ukrainian government to figure out what happened with CrowdStrike. Max, can you remind us what CrowdStrike is?
Right. CrowdStrike is the cybersecurity company. It's based in California, and this helped investigate the hacking in 2016 of the DNC. And so they were involved in the early days of the Russia investigation, essentially. But that line that Ukraine has the server, Trump is pretty vague about that, at least in the version of the transcript that we have.
And that version is not, like we said, not a verbatim word for word, a representation of the call itself. And that's significant, right?
Right. It's based on, I mean, it seems like a pretty thorough transcript to me, but yes, it does say it is not verbatim. And this is based on note takers who were listening in from the White House Situation Room while Trump was making this call from his residence.
Amanda, how does the release of this memo by the White House change any of the calculations that House Democrats have been making in regards to impeachments?
Well, it's funny because the White House was saying for a while, like, you know, or President Trump, like, well, you know, we're thinking of releasing this. And when you see it, it was a perfect call. There's nothing bad in here. Which when you see the summary of the call, it's actually pretty bad. I mean, you have the President of the United States asking a foreign leader for help in going after his political rival. And I think it's just so much easier for people to understand than the Mueller report. If you ask most people, including people who follow politics really closely, to summarize what the Mueller report said, I think it's going to be very hard for people to do that. This is so much easier to see. And so I think for a lot of Democrats, it makes it easier for them to say they support impeachment and to go back to their constituents and say, this is why, let me explain it to you. And again, it's the line is just a lot easier than the Mueller report.
And Amanda, what are you hearing from Republicans at the moment? The White House is trying to spin this call as insignificant. Are congressional Republicans going along with that messaging right now?
I mean, so far, yes, you aren't. You have some people like Mitt Romney, who is often more critical of other Republicans than other Republicans are of the president, saying he finds this troubling. Notably, you had yesterday the entire Senate, so that includes all the Republicans, go along with a Democratic resolution telling the White House to release the whistleblower complaint. And so I think the fact, you know, that shows that they're a little bit troubled by this. They want to examine it. But for the most part, you're having Republicans out there saying that this is nothing, and they're standing by Trump.
Now, Rudy Giuliani is at the center of this. Last night, The Washington Post reported that Trump iced out the traditional foreign policy professionals while Giuliani was carrying out the president's agenda in Ukraine. Max, I guess he was acting as sort of a parallel diplomat in some way. What do we know about his role?
Well, we know that he has been speaking at least on two occasions with Ukrainians and about the Biden issue. And that is even alluded to in the call where the president says the president of Ukraine is the one who brings up Giuliani. He says, by the way, you know, Giuliani's been having these conversations. That actually seems to give Trump an in to bring up the Biden issue. It was interesting to me to see that Giuliani is still kind of doing the president's bidding in this way and investigating and involved in this, when really his involvement was as the president's lawyer, among other lawyers, in the Russia investigation, which ended. So it is surprising to see him back involved in this.
Yeah. And President Trump accused former Secretary of State some months ago, former Secretary of State John Kerry, of violating a 1799 law called the Logan Act by interfering with Iranian foreign policy as a private citizen. And that reminded us of this situation. Could you explain a little bit about the Logan Act and whether Giuliani might be in violation of it here?
Sure, Matt. The Logan Act prohibits private citizens from negotiating on behalf of the government. So I'm sure people will be accusing him of that this time, perhaps because of Giuliani's past involvement with Trump's official legal team involved in the Russia investigation. Maybe he can use that in his defense.
Amanda, the Senate, as you know, voted unanimously in a non-binding resolution for the release of the original whistleblower complaint that started this whole thing. How significant is that fight now that the White House has put out this memo from the call?
Oh, it's still significant. I mean, you have lawmakers, obviously more Democrats, saying that, you know, this summary isn't enough. We want the whistleblower complaint. By law, the administration is supposed to give Congress this whistleblower complaint. So why haven't they done so? And so you're going to you now have a resolution passed by the entire Senate, so that has the support of Republicans as well. And so it's going to be harder for the White House to ignore it because it has the support of Republicans. They still haven't said that they're going to do it. There's been some whispers that maybe the whistleblower can testify before Congress. Maybe they will release parts of it, but so far nothing is said. And I just wanted to chime in on Rudy Giuliani today too, and the appropriateness of his role.
Yeah.
He was on Fox News this morning saying that he has had the Ukraine transcript read to him. He's not in government. And so why would he get access to this summary of the call before anyone in Congress and before other politicians? And so his role in this is, it's very weird.
Yeah. And you said that the whistleblower could testify in front of the House. Is that a possibility?
It's a possibility. I mean, I think that there's some discussions of whether this could happen. Again, this is nothing has been set. Nothing is near being set. But I think that's something that's potentially being discussed. I mean, obviously if the person did that, their identity would be out there. And I think this person, you know, they have to be ready, and they probably knew this in submitting their complaint, that their identity could get out there, and they're going to be opening themselves up to a ton of attacks.
Meanwhile, Acting Director of National Intelligence Joseph McGuire is scheduled to testify in front of the House Intelligence Committee tomorrow. Before we leave you both, can you just tell us briefly what we should be looking out for in that testimony, Max?
Well, I'm interested to see how much he will give away. He might sit there and not be giving any answers. Uh-huh. And remember, this is not a Senate-confirmed person. This is, at least not in this role. He previously was confirmed by the Senate in a different role. But this is a Trump appointee, and there's been so much shakeup in the leadership of the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. I counted more than a third of people who were leading that office this time last year are no longer there. So maybe there'll be some questions about that.
Got it. Amanda?
What was Trump's role? Did he pressure him to withhold the whistleblower complaint is what people will be looking for.
Very good. We'll all be watching, as will the rest of the country and the world. Amanda Terkel is the Washington Bureau Chief for HuffPost, and Max Kuttner is a journalist covering the FBI, Justice Department, and Russia probes. Thanks to both of you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
With Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi backing an impeachment inquiry into President Trump, we started wondering about other presidents who have been impeached. Presidents Andrew Johnson and Bill Clinton were both impeached by the House of Representatives and eventually acquitted by the Senate. Here's Chief Justice William Rehnquist back in 1999.
It is therefore ordered and adjudged that the said William Jefferson Clinton be and he hereby is acquitted of the charges in the said articles.
President Richard Nixon resigned in 1974 before the House could impeach him.
I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
Joining me now to walk us through all of this history is John Meacham, presidential historian, Pulitzer Prize-winning author, and co-author of the 2018 book, Impeachment and American History. Welcome to The Takeaway, John.
Thanks so much.
Let's start with the way that impeachment came into our Constitution. What was the intent behind Article 2, Section 4 of the Constitution, which spells out impeachment?
It was an attempt to add yet another check and balance to what was a document that, as James Madison put it, was designed to make ambition counteract ambition. Hmm. And the sense was that there had to be some check on a lawless president. You can be impeached for bribery, treason, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. It's a phrase from the English common law. It's undefined, as Gerald Ford later said. A high crime and misdemeanor is whatever the House of Representatives decides at a given point it is.
And of course, the question then becomes, does the alleged conduct of President Trump match with the kind of behavior that you think the framers envisioned would be a reason for impeachment?
In this case, I do. It's always dangerous to conscript the founders into a common, into a contemporary issue. You can't say, James Madison, what do you think about abortion? You know, that doesn't work. But in terms of the common sense of the language in the Constitution and the sense of the debates around it, reaching out to a foreign government for self-interest and particularly perhaps linking official conduct to that outreach would pretty clearly fall within what the framers were thinking. Remember, we know this thing has lasted 240 plus years. They didn't. Mm-hmm. And every government in the world, by and large, had tended to fall into corruption because of foreign influence. Here you have this vast expanse of territory. We barely won the Revolutionary War. We now know the British only came back once, but they didn't know that. They had every expectation that the Spanish, the French, the British, perhaps the Russians to the west, would always try to exert influence over North America. And it was a pretty safe bet, given the history of Europe and the history of the world. So they were very careful about trying to keep officers of the new American government free from foreign influence.
Let's look at the earliest case of impeachment. Andrew Johnson, 1868. Can you pull out any parallels between the actions, the alleged actions of President Trump and those of President Johnson?
Extremely rough, but there is this echo. Andrew Johnson was an unconventional figure in that he was a Democrat who had run as on a Republican ticket, a wartime election of 1864. He was put on the ticket. Lincoln got rid of his first vice president, Hannibal Hamlin, well, the wonderfully named Hannibal Hamlin.
Yes.
Johnson was there to help with the border states, to reassure states that had not seceded but were on the knife's edge still, even at that late hour in the war, that Lincoln was not an entirely a creature of the political North. So as Johnson comes into power after Ford's Theater, he didn't share really the same values and vision that Lincoln had. And so he began fairly quickly to try to undo the verdict of the Civil War. He was a unapologetic white supremacist. He vetoed civil rights legislation. He opposed the 14th and 15th Amendments and gave these kind of crazy conspiracy-minded speeches. So, you know, I'll let you draw the connection there. But what I think is important is he was undoing the makings of a consensus. And I do think President Trump has also attempted to undo what passes for a consensus in this country over the last 75 years or so.
Okay, so that's President Johnson. Fast forward a century. Does the investigation into Richard Nixon offer any insights as to how Congress may conduct impeachment proceedings against President Trump?
Well, that's the more interesting model in some ways. One of the things the last two impeachments have in common, and we'll be seeing this over the next several days, is they both had tapes.
Right.
And there was something about that level of evidence that I think helped convince people who are very wary of undoing presidential elections, even though this one is very much in dispute because of the Russian question, very wary. And so the evidentiary standard is one that's invented on the fly, basically, but will be interesting to watch. I think that Congress moved with great deliberation. When you look back on it, there were 25 and a half months between the break-in on June 17th, 1972, and Nixon resigning on August 8th. It was a case where, and this may happen too, I'm not sure quite how it would, but we have to watch this. It was a case where all the branches, the other branch as well, the judiciary branch, stepped in and played its role. I don't think President Nixon would have resigned and might not have been impeached, although I don't know that. If the Supreme Court had not ruled 8-0 that he had to hand over subpoenaed tapes. And so that was a case where the rule of law prevailed. For all the politics of 1973 and 74, the institutions held. And I think that is the test for us now, is will these institutions hold yet again?
And tapes, both in the Nixon case and in the Clinton case, is that what it would take in Trump's case for Republicans in the Senate to turn against him if there was a tape of him pressuring a foreign leader, for example?
You know, we have a reflexively partisan climate. And is it really that much worse than the post-Civil War, the post-Civil War climate, or the Vietnam era climate, or the generational politics of the 1990s? In some ways, yes, in this sense. Having a dedicated and devoted and constant mechanism of defense, both in the digital world and the partisan media world, defending the president and trying to turn anything that in a different generation might have been a fairly straightforward assertion of wrongdoing or evidence of wrongdoing, turning that against the institutions is something that's more immediate for us. Mm-hmm. I'm skeptical that cable news is ruining the republic. I think that's too easy. I think it's a reflection as much as a driver of our partisanship. But that's kind of an academic point at this juncture. It's very clear that I think we're going to see very, very soon, perhaps even as we're speaking, we're going to see Trump supporters declaring total war on the Biden family, on Nancy Pelosi, on the entire mechanism of this check and balance. And one of the things we have to be very vigilant about, no matter where we stand in a partisan universe, is there a point beyond which a president should not go? And is this the point? And that's something that reasonable people can disagree about. But what's going to be particularly dispiriting is if we have this argument, not about is this the line over which he should not cross or go, but was there a line at all? Hmm. That is, we dispute the facts. We right. dispute what you're saying about what he said. And that's one question. Then there's a nihilistic scenario, right? There's the question that, yeah, he did it, so what?
Yeah.
And we're going to hear that. We're going to hear that a lot.
Might hear it from the president himself. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where citizens have to stand there and we need to assess, is this reasonable and rational? And if so, then there'll be one result. But it also, just one final thing here.
Sure.
And this is clearly what happened in Johnson and Nixon and in Clinton. We're never going to get to an 80 or 90%, 95% level of support for one course of action or the other. You know, this is a big, disputatious, divided country. Disagreement is the oxygen of democracy. Madison once said, liberty is to faction what air is to fire. So we're going to be fractious. We're going to be divided on this. But the majority in this case does need to, I think, at least make an honest assessment of the facts, put it in context of what the framers wanted, and what do we want? Do we want a president who behaves in this way? And if the answer is no, then I think the course is fairly clear.
John Meacham is a presidential historian and Pulitzer Prize-winning author. Thank you so much for the history lesson and the perspective, John. Much appreciated. As we continue talking about the Democrats' move toward impeaching the president, we wanted to hear from our listeners on whether it could be a political liability for the Democratic Party. Some of you told us that's the wrong question.
Hi, this is Evan calling from Dallas, Texas. I think we should be asking whether the president committed impeachable offenses, not whether it can benefit the Democrats strategically. Are we really so lacking in integrity that we can't even pretend to be more concerned with doing the right thing and protecting our republic than with political expediency?
Hi, my name's Lorinda. I'm calling from the Metro Detroit area. And I'm just so tired of this thinking. He continues to perform impeachable acts, even criminal acts, and we're worried about strategy. How about the Democrats stand strong and be on the right side of history this time?
This is Casey from Zimbrota, Minnesota. It doesn't matter if it's a political liability or not. Wrong is wrong. Illegal is illegal, and the president is not above the law, nor should he be able to get away without consequence. Continuing to treat this as a bad political move is as much as saying politics are more important than our laws.
This is Teresa from Eugene, Oregon. I think finding the truth and holding people accountable to following the law is paramount. If an investigation led to impeachment, I would want Congress to do their job. We cannot have a government with checks and balances on the power of governmental branches if all three branches are not working to balance and limit each other. I am tired of Congress taking a pass at doing their jobs. Investigate, find the truth, take the necessary steps it leads you to. Be less worried about keeping your job and more worried about doing your job.
We also heard from a lot of you who said Democrats should be worried about whether this is the right move for the party.
Hi, this is Hannah from Seattle. I think it could be really risky to move towards impeachment proceedings before having all the facts about President Trump's supposed actions. I feel like it could turn middle-of-the-road voters away from voting blue in 2020. I also feel like it's really possible that voters could get frustrated with sabotage politics and feel that Congress is choosing to focus on taking down the president before facts have been proven and rather than focusing on creating and passing legislation.
This is Doris from Greenville, South Carolina. I think impeachment should happen, but if Trump is impeached, Pence becomes president, and Pence could be a tougher Republican to beat. I think the Democrats are between a rock and a hard place.
I'm Sasha Gannon Trussell. I'm from Northampton, Massachusetts. Morally and legally, the right decision, but definitely not the right strategy, because the Senate is majority Republican and they'll never approve the impeachment, so it's a moot point.
This is Jim Starzynski from Albuquerque, New Mexico. An impeachment process by the Democrats would be an absolute godsend to the Republicans, especially in the Senate. So many Republicans have had to give up their spines in order to put up with Donald Trump, afraid of what his base might do to them if they dissent. So if the Democrats pass an impeachment resolution and it comes up to the Senate, there could be, with this latest Ukraine event, enough Republicans who get together and agree to get rid of Donald Trump. Because if they do that, they know that only a part of his base will be angry with them, because a big chunk of it, the evangelical Christians, will absolutely love having Mike Pence as president.
So, do you think impeachment is the way forward?
Hi, this is Teresa from Wilmington, Delaware. Impeachment? No. Bad idea. It will just rile up his base and divide the Democrats.
I think the president believes that he can do whatever he wants and then lie about it with no consequences. Congress needs to begin the impeachment process. If he has broken the law, then yes, most definitely impeach. Bernadette Endwell, New York.
Keep those thoughts coming our way. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or find us on Twitter or Facebook. It's The Takeaway.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.